Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tim Dillon Show. We have a mind-blowing episode today. This is literally one of the most mind-blowing, probably the most mind-blowing podcast episode I've ever done. We have Whitney Webb on, who's a journalist. She's written the best articles about Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, about the powers behind Epstein. She's also written a great article about a lot of the companies that stand to profit from introducing the solutions to COVID-19. She, you know, writes a lot about Bill Gates and his relationship with Epstein. That's what she talks about on this podcast. We also play private audio from a private phone call that Whitney had with an Epstein accuser, a victim of Epstein, Maria Farmer, who the mainstream media has reported on. But of course, the mainstream media did not report everything Maria told them. So we had permission to play the phone call. We play clips from the phone call. Whitney breaks them down and analyzes them. Some of them are incredibly shocking, very disturbing. And then Whitney goes on and talks about Gates, and she talks about a lot of factions within the United States government that plan on copying the authoritarian model that you see in China of how they've structured their society. There's this idea that in order to compete with China and still be the top of global hegemony, we need to adopt a lot of the things that China has done successfully, including trampling human rights, including moving everything to a cashless, driverless society, eliminating the ownership of private vehicles. I mean, it's really crazy when she talks about this document that came out from a Freedom of Information request about how a lot of people in the government plan to use the economic shutdown and the pandemic to usher in a lot of new rules, regulations, surveillance systems, things like that. Whitney's great. She her work is always very well researched. She's not a hysteric. She's somebody who stands behind everything she says. And it's an honor to have her here. She writes at The Last American Vagabond. That's also a YouTube channel. She also has a Patreon that you can support her work, and the link will be in the description. She has a book coming out about Jeffrey Epstein. So this is about an hour and 15-minute conversation. Again, a lot of what goes on here is fucking unbelievable. So again, there's a few jokes. It's not overall a very funny episode, but you know, every now and then we do an episode like this to really keep you up at night. And this will absolutely 100% do that if you're not up at night already, which you should be. All right, everybody. We've got Whitney Webb. She's one of our favorites, one of the best journalists in America that doesn't live here. That's why she's better. She's written some great articles. She's written the best articles about Jeffrey Epstein. She's written a great article in The Last American Vagabond, right? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the site. And it's about Bill Gates, and it's about all the companies that stand to profit from all of the different solutions to coronavirus. And she's always doing a lot of research and work and then putting out these very long, really detailed, well-researched articles on very difficult topics that a lot of people don't go into. So we're very excited to have you. Thanks for coming on the show. And I spoke to you this morning, and you said we're going to go into Gates and stuff, because I, you know, obviously a lot of people saw me and Rogan kind of did that little, we had a little, a little fun argument about Bill Gates, who I don't know anything about other than I've read some articles about him. And and then Rogan was like, well, Bill doesn't have any reason, he has enough money. He doesn't want any more money. But as you know, whether it's George Soros or the Koch brothers or Bill Gates, billionaires often engage in social engineering. They have an ideology. They want to impact the world. Some of it is good. A lot of it isn't. So I what's interesting is like, we're going to all have to understand what Bill Gates and a lot of these people are trying to do. It should be transparent. And that was my thing with Joe. I was just basically like, listen, we all want to solve climate change. But if I said to you, part of that was having a one child per family policy, and you could never drive an SUV, and we're going to put a cap on, the energy that you could consume, you might say, wait a minute, whoa, hold on. So we all agree, nobody wants coronavirus. Everybody wants some way to prevent coronavirus, but It's the details, which is something that you're very good at. It's figuring out what the details are of these solutions. Quickly, because then we're going to go into this Epstein thing, but quickly, just blanket off the bat with Gates. What concerns you particularly about Bill Gates and some of the initiatives that he's pushed around the world?
All right. So Bill Gates is one of those billionaires who had a ton of money, and it took him a really long time to get involved in philanthropy. But not just speaking about Bill Gates, but so-called philanthropists in general. Since the day of the very first billionaire in the United States, John D. Rockefeller, they have tried to rebrand themselves as philanthropists. Even Jeffrey Epstein, before he was arrested the first time, used to be called philanthropist. It's been used a lot of times to basically launder a person's reputation when they get involved in odd or unsavory activities, which billionaires, we've seen over the years, sometimes are prone to do, right? So as far as Gates goes, a lot of people have compared his foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, to the Rockefeller Foundation, sort of as a the successor to that, even though that foundation still exists in a lot of ways, focusing a lot of attention on developing countries and some of those things that have happened. Scandals with the vaccines and all of that with Bill Gates has to do with the fact that his foundation has a lot of close ties to major pharmaceutical giants. And in some cases, some of those vaccines that were originally rejected for use in the United States ended up being sent abroad to other countries, developing countries like India, for example, where they ended up having really severe health effects on largely the girls that received them. And a lot of other controversies. I mean, vaccines in general, there's, a lot of people get really agitated when people bring up vaccines, but it's important to remember that there can be some vaccines that are produced poorly or produced, for example, in a facility that is not up to standards and has sanitary issues, for example. And then when those vaccines are used, that can cause adverse reactions. And that is, a crime, essentially, and wrong. And there can be people that can talk about pharmaceutical corruption and not necessarily be against vaccines as a science. And what we see a lot of times is this conflation of people saying, oh, you're criticizing this particular vaccine or this particular pharmaceutical company or this particular vaccine manufacturer, you must be against all vaccines. And I don't think that's true at all. But in terms of Bill Gates, one thing I do want to point out about him is that his rhetoric over the years has been very odd when it comes to vaccines. He says, stuff at these TED Talks like, we can, bring down the world population by, if we're good on vaccines and stuff like that. And that's kind of odd, right? Presumably vaccines exist to keep people alive longer, not to reduce population. So the fact that he's talking about it that way, I think it's reasonable that people are concerned about that, especially considering, too, that he's talked about for years that he's concerned that the global population is too large, specifically in Africa. A few years ago, he was saying that he was very concerned and bothered by how many the African youth boom is the term used in the report there. And I just don't really understand why we have to be putting, trotting out this billionaire on CNN and stuff, telling us how to respond to this crisis. When he doesn't have a medical degree, he's a guy that didn't even finish university. He dropped out of Harvard and then went on and became this, tech guy, massive tech billionaire because he got this deal with IBM in the 80s and all this stuff, right? But why is he giving medical advice on a massive scale? I mean, it just seems really odd. But the thing, to me, that's the biggest red flag about Gates is his relationship with Epstein. And I say this for a couple of reasons, mainly that if you look at who was one of the executors on Epstein's will, it was a guy named Boris Nikolic, who was actually Bill Gates' chief scientific advisor. There's pictures of Nikolic, Gates, and Epstein, also Larry Summers, all together palling around. And it came out, after last year, after the second Epstein arrest last year, that Epstein was very interested in eugenics, right? I mean, this was openly admitted in mainstream media. And what I was told, what we're going to get into today about Epstein by one of his victims, is that they talked about eugenics all the time and talked about the superiority of races and how other races are lesser than others. And she was like, this is how these people think. They talked to me like this. They told me I was lesser than them, because I didn't have their DNA.
How close were Gates and Epstein personally?
Well, so there has been a huge cover-up on Gates and Epstein ties. I can say that for a fact. because the New York Times, originally it said like they had met in 2016, and then the New York Times said, oh no, actually it was 2011, but that's a lie. And I know this because there is this article that is they have tried to scrub from the internet, but you can still find it if you're, you know, persistent like I am. It's from the Evening Standard, a UK newspaper. It's from January 2001. It was written by Nigel Rosser. And in there, it talks about a whole bunch of stuff about Epstein. Of course, this was before he was controversial, right? So it says a lot of things about Epstein. It even mentions the intelligence ties. It says CIA. It says Mossad in this article, right? But other one sentence that really caught my attention was Jeffrey Epstein made his, you know, his millions, all his money from his business links to these three men. And it says those three men are Leslie Wexner, Donald Trump, and the third one is Bill Gates. And this is in 2001. And so obviously, had to have been some relationship there, right?
Right.
Before 2001.
So this is an article written in 2001 about how, and why was it written? Was it like just a piece about Jeffrey Epstein? It was some type of just biography, or what exactly, what was the tone of the article?
So in this period of time, Epstein had gotten some media attention mainly because he was he was seen around Prince Andrew a lot in public during this period of time. And Ghislaine Maxwell had always sort of generated interest in the British press because her father was like this hated white collar criminal, basically, because he, you know, raided that pension fund the Daily Mirror and all this stuff. So she had sort of pop up in tabloid coverage throughout the 1990s. And this article was focusing on Ghislaine and Epstein's relationship with Andrew, and was trying to say to the British public, you know, who are these, you know, new pals of Andrew, Prince Andrew, that we're seeing, you know, hearing about all the time? Who are they really? And trying to find out something about them before anyone had really tried to do much of a deep dive on them, right? And so that's where this article came from. And it talks about Bill Gates openly. And the first Epstein victim to go to the FBI, Maria Farmer, who I interviewed yesterday, she said that when she was around Epstein and Ghislaine pretty much every day for like 2 years. And she said that she heard them talk about Bill Gates in 1995, like they knew him really well.
We're going to get into that interview because that's very interesting. But just in general, after looking into this information, is it your belief that it's very possible, if not probable or likely, that somebody like Bill Gates has very different views in private than the ones he's shared in public?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think all of these billionaires do. Right. I mean, let's think about Leslie Wexner, for example. If you're going to buy the reasoning that, well, he has so much money, he doesn't need anything else. I mean, why would he do anything bad, right? A lot of times there's these people like this that get this type of money, and when they can't buy anything else, they want control, right?
Yes.
They're about, you know, like you said, social engineering and control, or, you know, sort of imposing their vision of the world and what they think is best on other people.
Or telling everyone else to make sacrifices that they will never have to make. I mean, that's another big thing. Trying to, basically engineer the lives of regular people and tell them to make sacrifices where, you know, the wealthy and the government will never be forced to make those types of sacrifices.
Well, with Bill Gates and vaccines, why did his, you know, the pediatrician for his children come forward and say that Bill Gates refused to have his children vaccinated?
Is that true?
From what I understand, yes.
Wow. That's
but
very interesting.
But mainstream media didn't pick it up because obviously it's, you know, who wants Bill Gates, you know, on your bad side?
Well, we days, do. Right? We do right here. I've said that before. Come and get us. I'm kidding. Or am I? But let's get into this interview with Maria Farmer, who's an Epstein victim. She's somebody that you interviewed or spoke to on the phone for 3.5 hours, and she reached out to you because she was upset about a ruling that came down. Talk a little bit about this ruling that a lot of people don't understand the significance of. It essentially closes the door on anybody paying any price for what happened to those women.
Yeah. You know, in a nutshell, not to get too technical on anyone, basically what it means is that someone like Ghislaine Maxwell or any other co-conspirator in what Epstein was involved in walks free, and they walk free for good. It's basically saying these people are immune to prosecution, and any Epstein victim that comes forward and tries to say this person was involved, they can't go to court.
And that ruling came down, and it was basically, I think, separating civil and criminal trials. Was it something like that?
There's so many different cases right now. So I'm not 100% sure on that. But I mean, the important takeaway is that essentially it claims that these other, you know, the sweetheart deal, as it's called, negotiated.
It was done.
That stands. It was done correctly. You know,
and
so
part of that deal that he got the first time was that none of his co-conspirators had to be named, like Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah. Or they're immune, basically.
Or they're immune. Yeah. So they all got immunity. So when Epstein's first deal was given out by a judge in Florida, and it was negotiated by, I believe, Acosta, who is the Secretary of Labor, he negotiated that deal for Epstein. Epstein, part of it was that none of his co-conspirators would ever have to face prosecution. That seems insane that you would be giving blanket immunity to all his co-conspirators, but then that was the ruling that was held up recently so that Ghislaine Maxwell. So tell us a little bit about Maria Farmer and how you guys started talking.
Well, she actually contacted me a while ago, and I had just been really busy and was not, I was working on other stuff, not Epstein research, just because of like the crazy times we live in. There's so much going on, right? But then this ruling happened, and I was like, you know what? Let's talk right now. You know, your guys' voice matters. We need, I mean, the ruling to me is just so outrageous because it just sends this horrible message that people can get away with crimes on this scale to kids.
Yeah.
You know, and nothing happens to them as long as they're in bed with intelligence or organized crime or the right, you know, billionaires, you have enough money. I mean, you can do anything you want, basically.
That is the takeaway. That certainly is the takeaway, you know?
Right. So it's infuriating. And I was like, you know, now's a good time. And so I had originally planned to just ask her about the ruling, and she told me, you know, she had talked to so many reporters and mainstream media. I mean, pretty much every outlet you can think of, and they just would not tell her story. She said, every time I would bring up Wexner, they always cut it out. And she told me Wexner's the head of the snake is what she said. She said of this whole operation, he's the head of the snake. You know, he's the guy, he's the brains of this. He's the guy that's coordinating this all from his, you know, mansions. This is the guy in charge, basically. And essentially, you know, and I mean, other people have said this too. Epstein was basically just like a project manager. He was like mid-level management in terms of this scheme. You know, people say, oh yeah, well, he's gone. So, I mean, that must mean this stopped. No way.
Right.
You know, the people that are at the top that were doing this, you know, Epstein was just, he was there because he was really charismatic. He could convince these girls that he was going to make their lives better. You know, he was apparently really charming and able to, like, you know, bring them in. And then once they're in, I mean, you just, the tactics these people use, I mean, mainstream media doesn't really report on that either. You know, like they wouldn't let them, they'd have to call to permit for permission to go outside. There are all these pinhole cameras everywhere. They watch their every move. They even watch them like undress to change clothes and stuff. You know, I mean, once you're in there, it's really hard to get out. Right.
What were some of the more, you know, when she called you, what were some of the things that, other than Wexner, what were some of the other things that she had told you that specifically mainstream media would not allow her to say or would cut out?
Well, it was specifically anything to do with Wexner and a lot of other things. I mean, it was just so much because, you know, I had read about her story in mainstream media because they've reported on her. Right. And honestly, she said everything that she had told them, and less than 5% ended up in mainstream media.
Are you of the opinion that Wexner is an asset of either a foreign intelligence service or our intelligence service?
She said that he's Mossad. That's what she said.
Right. It does.
He's part of the mob, like the mafia.
Right.
She said it was like it's organized crime. And, you know, in my series, I point that out too, that he, you know, has basically documented ties to the National Crime Syndicate, which is the Jewish and Italian mafia. They started their union in the 1920s, and they've pretty much been blackmailing ever since. And they got in bed with the OSS, the precursor to the CIA. And then after the CIA was made, they got in bed with them. And that's where all of this has really come from. Right. So Wexner's, you know, a part of that, and he's been carrying this on. But every time she would bring him up, they would cut it out. They don't want to go after Wexner. But, you know, I mean, if he's the head of this, it won't stop until there's some accountability for him. But apparently, because he's the richest man in Ohio, no one wants to say anything. And I think that's sick.
Absolutely. What did she say about Ghislaine Maxwell? What was her role in this? And where does she think she is now?
Well, she said Ghislaine Maxwell is the most dangerous woman she thinks she's ever met and the most dangerous asset for Israel. That's a direct quote. She said that. And she said that Ghislaine Maxwell talked about Israel and said that she and Wexner and Epstein were not loyal to the United States. They were loyal to Israel. I mean, they straight up told her that. She had passports, Ghislaine did, for like 5 different countries, including Israel, the United States, the United Kingdom, France. This woman was balls deep in intelligence. And of course, anyone that looks at her father knows this. Ghislaine also told her that she believes her father was murdered by Israeli intelligence, but then given a state funeral because of his importance, right? Among other things. But she said Ghislaine is a dangerous, very dangerous woman, but didn't have a lot of friends. So the people she would treat as, you know, her servants, her employees, she ended up trying to like share information about herself. She'd like have her go shopping with her, sit her down and go through photo albums of her childhood. She had 12 photo albums of her growing up with the royal family. That has not been mentioned in mainstream media. They claim the Prince Andrew ties were like in the late 90s with Ghislaine Maxwell. She says no way. I mean, they were really young in these pictures. And there were like photo album after photo album.
Wow.
Of them. Yeah.
When you say dangerous woman, is it farmers like that Ghislaine could make people disappear? That she could, did Farmer suggest that, like, you know, there were certain girls or victims that she used to see around that she doesn't see around anymore? Was there anything of that nature discussed?
Well, on the last point, she didn't say Ghislaine, she didn't talk about Ghislaine murdering anyone per se, but she definitely does think that there were a lot of kids that ended up dying that got recruited. We can go into that later. But in terms of what Ghislaine Maxwell was doing, she said that she one day went to her art portfolio because she was recruited to work for Epstein. She was basically forced to work for Epstein because of the dean of the school, the art school she was going to in New York, basically said, oh, you're going to work for, you know, these guys, basically. And that's why she was there. So she had this art portfolio. depends on how you define cool.
No, I said what school? School, not that's cool.
Oh, what school? Yeah, yeah. Sorry, it came through when I was like,
No. Yeah.
No, it was the New York Academy of Art, and the woman that was the dean, the head of the school at the time was a woman named Eileen Guggenheim. And there's pictures of her with this lady, Marina Abramovich, pictures of her with Clintons.
At this point in the podcast, I do want to say that myself, neither you, are suicidal.
No, not at all.
Okay.
No.
Just want to let everyone know that.
I intend to take these people to town.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because the fact that mainstream media would not report this, and it's my job now.
Yeah.
The FBI knew this, all this stuff, in 1996.
Jesus.
And most of mainstream media knew this in the early 2000s. Vicki Ward knew all this stuff.
So the Guggenheim owned school in Manhattan, or she's the principal or somebody. Tells Maria that you are now going to work for Jeffrey Epstein.
Basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as what? As an assistant? As a masseuse? As a...
I mean, she ended up doing like interior decorating and stuff like that for all these apartments, because they had this whole apartment building that's officially owned by Epstein's brother, where like all these girls were kept. There were so many places. There were so many buildings. They didn't just have these apartments. Yeah. They had offices where Epstein worked. Ghislaine had offices. I mean, just tons of real estate.
How many women are we talking about, girls, at any given time?
Marie, this was in 1995 to 1996. She said that she saw between at least 5 different girls a day come in and out of Epstein's offices.
Okay, so he's running a global operation.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Okay. I have some audio clips from the call
please.
That we can get into.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Yeah.
Now you've heard a lot
about this aspect.
You've heard a lot of mind blowing stuff, but you said this call you were on was one of the most mind blowing things you'd ever heard.
Yeah. I thought I knew this case. I re- reported on it like all last year. I thought I knew what had happened. I just can't believe that no one told these women's stories, that they like limited hangouted the crap out of it. I'm appalled. I don't like mainstream media. That's why I do what I do, because they're not doing their job, you know, but I didn't really like hate them until this call.
Interesting. All right, let's get into the first clip here that is a clip from the call with you and Maria Farmer, Epstein victim.
Whitney, I've got to tell you something. This is why I've been dying to tell you. There are only 30 women that have come forward. 30. Whitney, I saw between, I'm not kidding, I'm very disturbed by this part. I saw at least 5 girls come in that house a day. I mean, no, on a really slow day, there would be 3 little girls.
I know it was really high, the actual amount.
Oh, Whitney, it's in the thousands. Where are they? Where are they? Are they dead? I mean, these children have to be dead because here's the thing. Like Brad was like, well, what if they became drug addicts? What?
You think some of them were killed?
I think that they had to be, because here's the thing, Whitney. Brad said he knows of 500 just in Florida. Like, we can't find them. Where are they? And the thing is, like, oh, this kid's making that his loud machine out there. Come inside for a second, Brady. Anyway, all I was going to say is that these children were between, you know, thousands. I was there a year, and I saw thousands of little girls, which is, it was so exhausting, Whitney. They were in his offices. There were just constantly little girls there, constantly. And I remember one of the reasons I quit, I said, I am tired of dealing with the number of people coming and going. You know, I'm just tired of, and that sounds horrible now, but I didn't understand what was happening entirely. I just knew it was weird. And I certainly didn't know it was pedophilia. I mean, and the other thing is, Ghislaine had said, one day in Florida, when I was in Florida, she said, you know, we have to go on a jog for a while. And I said, why? And she said, well, Jeffrey needs 3 massages. So while I was in Florida, there were 3 little girls being assaulted. And now I look back on that, I'm so creeped out. You know, I didn't know. But I knew that they abused their maids from the Philippines. That was another reason I quit. Because one day I went to take a nap upstairs in the 66 or in the mansion on 71st. And, you know, I worked the door, like signing people in, and there was no one coming in that day. And so I went and took a nap. And they were the sweetest ladies from the Philippines ever. And they came in and they were like, kind of tucking me in. And one of them whispered, I said, how long have you worked here? And she said, we were stolen. Like, what does that mean? They were stolen. They were trafficked. And they had them in, they had women from the Philippines in Florida and in New York and in the house on in the ranch. And no one ever cares. Like, I mentioned this and everybody goes, yeah, well, they trafficked people out of the Philippines and Thailand as servants.
Yeah, I mean, that is so incredibly disturbing to listen to the idea.
I know.
Yeah, the idea of that the mainstream media wouldn't report that there were so many more potential victims. And there's been very little effort on the part of the media to find these women, you know?
Yeah, well, those 500 victims in Florida, they have their names. They can't find them anywhere.
Really? Who's got their names?
One of the victims' lawyers.
And they cannot...
They know there's these 500 victims in Florida they can't find.
And how did they get the names of those victims?
I think you'd have to ask them. I don't really know exactly how they... But, I mean, you know, it's their job to investigate this stuff. They have all the victims that have come forward.
Yeah.
I mean, they apparently have names, and these girls are nowhere. And that's just 500. Like she was saying, this was in the 90s. This was like 5 a day. Different girls.
Yeah, back then you could make people disappear relatively easily, especially if they were from a lower socioeconomic background. Some of them were foster kids. Some of them were, you know, fall through the cracks. And so easily nobody's looking for those girls. Nobody's trying to find them. It's insane. Now, Maria Farmer was a victim of Epstein. How? Was she sexually assaulted by him? Or what was her role there? So she started out as an interior decorator. Then how does she get wrapped up in what else was going on?
Let me tell you, I'll try and summarize her story. And when you hear it, you will realize why the mainstream media will not tell her story, because it happened. The worst of it happened at Wexner's house.
Okay.
In New Albany, Ohio. Right. So obviously if they were to talk about it in any sort of detail, they'd have to talk about Wexner. Right.
Right.
So, at some point where she was working for Epstein, she was basically told, oh, Abigail Wexner, that's Leslie Wexner's wife, wants an artist in residence. And she was basically, you know, told it would be great. And she could go eat at this country club, go play tennis there, and it was going to be all nice, and there was this big estate, and there were horses. I don't know. So she ends up going. She stays in his guest house. It has, just like all these other residences, all these cameras everywhere. They watch her every move. She has to call Abigail Wexner or someone to get, you know, permission to leave the house, to even go outside and, like, sit on the porch, you know? This country club, she tried to go, and she was told that she wouldn't be served because she's not Jewish.
Interesting.
Which is weird. But apparently she said all these people, like Ghislaine, you know, all these people would just tell her they were, like, really supremacist. I don't know. So apparently she said that didn't surprise her based on everything else she experienced around these people. But at some point, you know, she was there for 3 months, and they really limited the amount of food they gave her. She felt like she was being starved, she said, which is disturbing. So she was basically trapped there, you know. Epstein and Ghislaine came, I think, 3 to 4 times during her 3 month stay there. And on the last day, they tried to rape her. Both of them.
Both of them tried
Maxwell
to rape her.
Maxwell and Epstein.
Mm-hmm. And what happened then?
Well, so when we talked, she jumped around a lot from different topics, from this to that. From what I understand, after that, you know, they ended up leaving. She called the police, and the police basically said they weren't going to come help her because they work for Wexner. They work at his gate at the estate, and to, like, stop calling, basically.
And how old was she when this was happening?
She was an adult, but I don't know how. The thing is, she was an adult when this happened, but they took her sister. They kidnapped her sister, and she was like 15.
When did they kidnap her sister?
I'd have to look back at my notes, because it's a long story. I mean, 3.5 hours.
No,
right?
Of course.
And this was just yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? But I mean, the mainstream media, the New York Times, basically makes the story sound like, oh, she went to Wexner's house to paint a mural, and Epstein hired her, and then Epstein tried to put his hands on her, and then she called the cops, and, you know, that was it.
Right.
No. And apparently at some point, this bodyguard for Wexner, who's former, like, special forces military guy, who's now Will Smith's bodyguard, he basically came over and was like, you know, you're never leaving here, and was like, basically, like, I'm going to kill you. And the only reason she said she made it out is because there was a landline in that house, and she called literally everyone she had ever met in her entire life.
Wow.
Her entire, like, her whole family, as many people as she could, saying, they are trying to kill me.
Now,
and because they saw her making a stink with all these cameras, they ended up letting her go. And she said to me, I was an adult at the time. What if I had been one of those preteen girls or one of those younger kids? What would have happened to me?
Did she ever see any notable people, any bold-faced names with Epstein and Ghislaine that would be surprising to anybody?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that shocked me, honestly, is that she said that in New York, Ghislaine would go to these, like, around the time school would get out, to, like, middle schools. She would, like, drive around and say that she was recruiting models for Victoria's Secret, and would go up to, like, all these 12-year-old girls with, like, braces and stuff and school uniforms. But she almost always went to do this with Ivana Trump, Trump's ex-wife. And
really?
So that they were together all the time in this, going around in cars, talking to these young girls, and that they would exchange information. And the next day those girls would be in Epstein's office.
So she would go around to, I imagine, you know, were these prep schools? Are these public? I mean,
I don't know exactly what type of school it was. But
it's hard to imagine that they're going to very wealthy schools, because then the parents of those kids would also be sort of powerful and connected people. But who knows? Who knows? But so she was going to junior high schools, middle schools with Ivana Trump, and getting and saying she was recruiting girls for Victoria. Wait, what was she recruiting girls for?
She told Ghislaine told Maria, because Maria would come along in the car. They'd be like, come with us. Like, she, like Ghislaine would take her shopping and all this stuff. She'd be like, get in the car. Let's go. You know,
right.
And she would like stay in the car and like see these exchanges happen, you know? But one thing she did tell me is that they asked the kids about their grades. They only wanted the kids with good grades. They wanted smart kids, and they wanted talented kids, like creative kids.
And she would say, I'm recruiting for a modeling agency. And then, and she would do this with Ivana Trump. Yeah, I mean, it's satanic. It's horrible. It's evil. Ivana Trump, what's the angle there? I mean, does her name come up? Yeah.
I honestly don't know, because it had never come up before, but she was like, I want her to explain herself. Why was she always there? And why was she always going around with Ghislaine with these kids? You know, why was she involved? Like, she should explain herself. That's what Maria said.
Are there a lot of photos with Ghislaine and Ivana Trump? I haven't seen any, but that doesn't mean they
I
don't
exist. I believe so.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
I mean, I have to go. I mean, there's pictures of Ghislaine and Trump from, like, the early 90s and all that stuff. So it really honestly wouldn't be this surprising. This was, like, mid-90s, right? This is, like, 95. You know, by the time it hit, like, 2000 and so, like, the Trump-Epstein relationship sort of started to get rocky.
It started to degenerate. Why? Why exactly did it start to get rocky?
Well, from what I understand, it was sort of competition about real estate at some point. There was this mansion in Palm Beach that Epstein wanted to buy and flip, and then he showed it to Trump and asked his opinion, and then Trump ended up taking it from Epstein or something like that. Some sort of like real estate.
Marksmanship. Gamesmanship.
Yeah, I don't know. And so they got mad at each other. And apparently after Trump did that to Epstein, Epstein tried to like set him up or something with some sort of like blackmail thing.
So Maria, when did Maria start figuring out that, hey, this is not a modeling agency. It's not a, these aren't talent scouts. These people are pedophiles. Did she figure it out before she got, was it the rape in Ohio that did it, the attempted rape, or she had no.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Yes. Okay.
She said during the attempted rape, she was like, she said everything like that started to click, all this weird stuff she'd seen and just like didn't understand, just thought they were like just weird, total weirdos. When she was being assaulted, it just clicked. She's like, these people have been around my sister, you know, who's way younger than her.
Right.
These people have been around my sister. And then she said that she, out of nowhere, had this feeling that they'd taken these pictures she had of her sisters that were like hidden in like the basement of this guest house. She like had all her stuff there, like super organized. And because she was an artist, she had like some pictures of like her younger sisters, like half naked for like anatomy stuff, but she always painted them with their clothes on. And apparently they had gone in there and taken the pictures. And after she escaped that mess, barely, she called Epstein's office trying to get those pictures back. And eventually someone called her back and said, don't try and get the pictures back. They're in his briefcase and he's using them. And then she hung up.
How long did you work for him in total?
It was 1995 to 1996 when she was assaulted. I don't know exactly what month she began. I had to do a follow-up call with her. It was just taking it all in at once, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I was just like, tell me whatever you want to tell me, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, I have all afternoon. Let's go.
What else? Did she say anything?
I'm gonna have to do follow-up stuff.
Mm-hmm. What else do you remember in terms of disturbing or, you know, things that you had not necessarily heard before?
Well, there's a clip for this one.
Yeah.
She said the FBI was just as abusive to her as Epstein and Maxwell.
Right.
Which is just insane, since that's supposed to be the institution that protects people like this.
Yeah, who believes? Nobody listening to this show believes that, I'll tell you that much. I'm sure there are people out there that believe that. Nobody listening to this show. Let's play that clip, because that's an interesting clip to get into. Did they, after she left, was that the end of contact she had with them after the assault and they finally let her out? Did she have any further contact with them?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. She said that when she went back to New York after that whole incident in Ohio, that Epstein stalked her and followed her around.
Very creepy. All right, we're going to play the clip now. Here's the FBI clip.
I mean, I can't even explain to you how abusive the effing FBI is. It's unbelievable to me. I mean, they, first of all, never offered me witness protection. And when I first called them, they knew I was telling, believe me, they knew I was, they knew everything I was telling them. They already knew because they're in on it. And it was so weird, his reactions when I was talking to him, you know, I called and I got some answer guy, and then he passes me to some guy who's like, when I start talking about Wexner, you know, and I asked the guy, do you have, this is all over the phone in 1996. I said, do you have a file on Les Wexner? And he said, why? And I said, he's the head of the snake in this, in America. And I don't even know, I was intuiting this just, and also I think it's common sense when you see all the stuff I saw going on. And anyway, when I said that to him, he said, oh, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we do. And I said, well, these people are using child pornography, and they've stolen photographs of my sisters. That right there would have been life in prison for Jeffrey and Ghislaine. I still have the envelopes with their touch DNA and fingerprints on them, and the FBI will not take them from me. They never would. They would never take the envelopes that they stole. I mean, they photographs out of these envelopes, and I have proof. I still have the envelopes, Whitney. And the FBI was like, yeah, no, we don't need that. They also knew in 1996 that I'd been trafficked and Annie had been trafficked, and that would have been enough to put them away. But they never cared. They didn't care. And the worst part was I named everybody. I named Donald Trump. I named everyone who I thought was a co-conspirator at the time. So I named, like, Alan Dershowitz, Donald Trump, absolutely the Clintons. You know, these are people that I saw coming and going that I knew were part of it. And I made it really clear that this is a very scary thing for children, and that I see between 5 and 10 girls a day going upstairs. And now that I know what's happening to them, I want it stopped. And yeah,
that's where it's supposed to go.
Yeah. I mean, this is just mind-blowing stuff. You know, when she says that she tells the FBI that, you know, she has information on people that are trafficking children and they do nothing. And we've heard this before. We heard it with the Franklin scandal. There's been many other pedophile rings in the UK, the Kinkora Boys Home in the UK, North Fox Island, another much smaller, but also wealthy, powerful people abusing children. The Franklin scandal is the big, you know, from the 80s and 90s is the huge precursor to Epstein, where you had a very politically connected figure doing the same exact thing. What is your belief when you zoom out for a minute and you look at this from 30,000 feet? And what does this say about our society? What does it say about the ruling class? What does it say about elites? What does it say about how people are controlled? What does it say to you after looking at all this stuff? What can you extract from this and apply it to, like, kind of an overarching thesis of what's going on that we don't really know about?
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is definitely global in scale, number one. I think a lot of these elites aren't loyal to the nations they live in. They're loyal to their ruling class. Like, this is a supranational, like, swamp, basically. You know how people in the U.S. are calling, like, you know, the deep state, the swamp. I mean, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of billionaires that have this sort of supranational structure, and they're just, like, in it to do this sick stuff. Because Leslie Wexner is not the only billionaire that's into this.
Right.
I can say that for a fact.
When we hear people talk about the occult, and that a lot of these people are just into strange, weird, ancient religions and weird types of ceremonies and things like that, how much does that figure into some of the things that you've looked at, whether it's Marina Abramović or what? Because I dismiss a lot of that stuff. Because I say it's bad enough if they're pedophiles. I don't really care if they're satanic or Mormon. It doesn't really matter that much to me. But right. How much credence do you put in this stuff where you do see a lot of occult imagery and a lot of occult types of ceremonies in these, you know, whether it's secret societies or fraternity? I mean, what amount of weight do you give that stuff?
Well, you know, I think throughout the time, like several decades, have there been a lot of people looking at this stuff? I think intelligence agencies have had people out there to do what they call muddy the waters, you know, try and discredit legitimate research into these type of crimes by putting out stuff that's just like, you know, nuts. But in terms of like the, you know, the Satanist stuff and all of that, actually, I didn't take any clips out from this, but Maria did said that she saw weird symbols at like Epstein's places and Ghislaine's apartment and stuff that she saw somewhere else laterward, and someone told her that like that was Baphomet, like a Satanist thing. Like she said she saw that, but wasn't like overly familiar with that type of stuff.
It was tasteful. It wasn't overdone. The Baphomet. The satanic statues were too tasteful. It wasn't overdone. It was a little Baphomet there. What when people talk about the Clintons and Trump, you know, we're talking about the most, you know, powerful people, but see, they're not the most powerful people in the world, but they're certainly, you know, they occupy some of the most powerful positions in the world. What is your opinion of the role that either one of those men had in this after looking at a lot of the information that you've looked at?
Well, honestly, I think since the days of John F. Kennedy, the president doesn't really have as much power as we'd like to think he does.
Right.
I think part of the reason for that is to make people think that elections like actually make a difference, at least presidential elections. And that as long and have people, you know, sort of develop this political savior complex, as long as we have the right guy in the White House, you know, as long as, you know, we can fix things if we get this one guy in this one office. And I think since the days of JFK, that type of stuff is not really reasonable anymore, because what we're dealing with is, you know, these intelligence agencies that do these things, like, you know, support Epstein in that type of activity, for example, but they're also involved in drug running. They're also involved in gun running. I mean, they're essentially organized crime syndicates. So, and like I said earlier, they got in bed, the CIA, right, as soon as it was formed, basically got in bed with the mob. And they're in bed with the mob in a bunch of other countries. They work closely with other intelligence agencies like Mossad and MI5 in the UK that do the same thing. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's basically who rules the world, but they answer to people too, right? And that's actually, there's this one clip that I have to conclude, I guess, where Ghislaine's talking about that a little bit, because she says that even though Ghislaine and Wexner were working for Israel, right? So she said Wexner was the head of the snake in America, but there's another family that she thinks is like the head of the snake.
Okay,
right?
And where does she think Ghislaine Maxwell is currently?
That's we'll get into that. So let's play the clip.
All right, let's play
the
clip.
Unpack from there.
Let's play the clip. All right, here Maria Farmer, Epstein victim, is talking about Ghislaine Maxwell.
So then she says to me, you know, my dad was a very powerful man, and you know, he was very important. She said, Maria, you don't understand. And then she's showing me like who she grew up with and how powerful he was and how much money they had. And then she goes on to tell me, she said, you know, Maria, and this is true, she said, and she showed me, she had passports. Get this. I don't know how this is legal. She had a passport, a French passport, an English passport, an Israeli passport, an American passport, and there was one other. I'm trying to think of what the other one was. And I was like, I thought you were only allowed to be a citizen like of two countries or something. I didn't know. And she's like, oh, no, because of my dad. I'm a citizen of all these nations. And I'm like, what? So then later when she was talking to me about something one day, she said that the Rothschilds were the greatest protectors of her family. And she wasn't talking about Lynn Forrester, by the way.
She was talking about the other ones.
The people that are in her.
Okay. So the Rothschilds, who are the Rothschilds? Because that's like, they're the centerpiece of every conspiracy since the beginning of time, pretty much. Who are they? I mean, as soon as I hear the Rothschilds, I usually roll my eyes and go, oh boy, here we go. Then people are going to start talking about numerology soon. And, you know, like they're going to get into like, so who are the Rothschilds? I mean, who are the Rothschilds? Other than a very,
They're a multi-generational banking family. I mean, I don't want to like talk about all the different things people have said about them over the years, but there are some obvious facts people can point to. A multi-generational banking family in several countries in Europe. You know, a lot of very influential people that later go into positions of major political power. Sometimes they're Rothschild bankers. Like Macron of France used to work for a Rothschild bank. Commerce Secretary of the United States, Wilbur Ross, also used to work for them. Right. But it's also worth pointing out, since, you know, it's pretty much documented now that these guys were working with Israeli intelligence, that the influence of the Rothschilds in the creation of Israel. I mean, this is historical fact, the Balfour Declaration that really paved the way for the creation of Israel as a political state. Was addressed to the Rothschild family. I mean, they were the people that really pushed, funded and nurtured the Zionist movement in its early days in the 19th century. And I mean, you can see that reflected in Israel today. One of the biggest roads in Tel Aviv is named after a Rothschild. The Knesset building, which is like Israel's Congress, I mean, that was financed by the Rothschild family. They have definite influence there. I would argue, and I think a lot of other people, I mean, it's hard to see that type of money floating around and patronage to a certain nation state and assume they don't have influence there.
And,
right.
And Ghislaine's father was an Israeli asset, intelligence asset, and a media mogul, right? He published papers.
In the UK.
In the UK, yeah. Right, right. Okay. So he was, you know, probably the propaganda arm.
He worked for several different intelligence agencies.
Okay.
Robert Maxwell did. Like, he had a relationship with Russian intelligence as well. But apparently British intelligence thought about recruiting him at some point, and they said no because he's only loyal to Israel. So he was considered to be like, you know, an Israeli super spy, basically. But he had like a lot of connections to different intelligence agencies in the world. But apparently he had been given money to build his media empire by Mossad financiers or financiers and had basically been, put in this position to manage this money. And he didn't, you know, wasn't able to pay Mossad back at some point and started making threats. And got pushed off a boat.
When Epstein gets caught the second time, is this just a major glitch in the matrix? Is this, did nobody see this coming? How does, you know, he's got all these powerful friends. He gets away with it the first time. What is the second time then? How do we understand that? Is it that just, you know, you had an aggressive district attorney in New York, or how exactly, or aggressive U.S. attorney? How exactly does he get brought in the second time?
So Maria said that it had to do with some very tenacious NYPD detectives that were very adamant about, you know, getting this guy charged again. She said the Berman guy, Jeffrey Berman, the district attorney, is not a good guy. That's what she said. But she said that he basically had to act because these guys at NYPD were like really persistent, and that she knew that he was going to be arrested like 2 weeks before because they had come to interview her and like solidify up the case and all this stuff.
And these NYPD guys, how does the case even fall into their lap?
I don't know the details of that, to be honest. Personally, before I talked to her, I thought this had to do with Deutsche Bank, because just 2 weeks before he was arrested, Deutsche Bank, which was the only bank that would still really do business publicly anyway with Epstein, closed their accounts.
Do you think there's anything true about the idea that Anthony Weiner's laptop had information on it? Is this something that you've heard this story, that you've heard this idea? Have you not?
But
I mean, I'm asking
not
you.
Any evidence for that?
Okay, but NYPD guys certainly pushed for Epstein to be, I guess.
That's what Maria said. She said they came to her in June.
Okay.
Of last year and were building a case, and that it was them, not the Berman guy. And she said some of the stuff that Berman said during the press conference she found really offensive. I'd have to go back in the call and find out exactly what she said about it. She named the detective at NYPD that was like, she said was awesome. But I can't recall his name right
now. After the assault, Epstein is then stalking her. What does that mean?
Following her around. Apparently they really didn't like it when someone left. And she had tried to quit numerous times before, and it was always like, no, 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 you can go here, you can go there. They would try and pass her off to, like, you know, friends or whatever, and eventually that's how she ended up at Wexner's place.
Yeah, and I guess it's intimidating when you have all these powerful, rich people around you and you're working for them. You don't want to make enemies. You try to stick it out. You know, you know, obviously, once you're assaulted, then you're like, okay, it's time to go.
Well, I mean, she didn't realize, like I said, a lot of the things that she had seen over the years that she had just thought was weird and, like, dismissed, it just all sort of, when during the assault, she said it all just sort of started to click and, like, come together. And she was like, oh, that's what these people really are.
What about the Dubin family? Have you read at all about the Dubin family? You know, Vanity Fair did an article about them.
Like Glenn Dubin and his wife was Epstein's girlfriend. Yes. And then the daughter was like, he wanted to marry the daughter.
Yeah.
Apparently, this is kind of common with these families that are tied to this.
Did you see the thing about Bloomberg goes, wherever I am in the world, I get my daughter a date? Do you see that?
Oh, yeah, about China. Like, I set her up with dates with all these oligarchs in China. Yeah.
Yes.
I guess they look at their kids this way. It's sad.
I mean,
these people are messed up in the head. They obviously don't have normal, happy family lives.
Well, neither did I, but I'm not fucking kidnapping kids outside of schools, you know? You can overeat. You can do drugs. That's how I've dealt with it. This episode of the Tim Dillon Show is brought to you by Blue Chew. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go, when you had a big, hard dick? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up! BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue, dummy. What, did you lose oxygen to the brain at birth? Are you a dum-dum? Are you an aggressive beast of a person that can't really read, can't organize your thoughts? You just sit there panting and sweating, trying to remember what the laws are. You can't just grab people and bite them. That's who this is for. That's why we got to tell you the color is BLUE. Blue Chew, not Blue's Clues. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. I don't think we're allowed to say that, Ben.
No,
okay, great. No, leave it in. People like the authenticity. Take them. Get a big dick. Full stomach, empty stomach. They're chewable. They work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. And you know when an opportunity arises, whenever you say it does. I'm kidding. That's not real. Make sure you have consent. You ask the person if they would like to see your penis. Do you want to see my beanie? Blue Chew is prescribed online by licensed physicians. Nelson from The Simpsons laugh. I wish I could do that better, but Blue Chew is prescribed online by licensed physicians. What is it? So you don't have to go to the doctor's office or wait in line at the pharmacy. It ships right to your door or your mother's door in a discreet package. They're made in the USA. We're making dick pills, not N1, not masks. N95 mask or whatever the hell. We don't make them. We don't make any antibiotics. But if you need a hard cock, we make it right here in the USA. We don't farm that out, baby. The Chi-Coms aren't doing that. That's us. We can get your dick woke up. So that's BLUECHEW.com. BLUECHEW.com. Promo code TIM. Try it free. Where is Ghislaine now? What's she up to? What is she going to come out and reveal herself publicly? She's suing Epstein's estate because she wants her money or something. There is a lawsuit.
Well, I think that's about getting the money back for the intelligence agency that funded this whole thing back to where it came from.
Right.
Because why else would she be suing? Because, I mean, her money didn't come, you know. It was all given to her.
Do you think
like all of Epstein's money was given to him? He didn't make like billions. He was given all this money by Wexner.
Do you think we'll see Ghislaine Maxwell again ever publicly?
I don't know, but Maria Farmer says that she is not hiding in Israel, that she's living in the Rothschild mansion.
Where's that? Where's the Rothschild mansion?
In the UK. Apparently they have several. But that she's with the UK Rothschilds. The head of that family, by the way, Lord Jacob Rothschild, since we mentioned her earlier, Marina Abramovich, they have recently this picture of them together and behind this painting that's called like Satan Summons His Legions. They're like posing in this together. Right. I mean, it's weird.
Something's up. Why? I was looking, and again, I was always a skeptic of Pizzagate only because there were no victims. Right. you know, Franklin victims, Kinkora victims come forward, North Fox Island victims come forward, Jeffrey Epstein victims come forward. In anything without victims where we're just looking at art or we're just looking, but if you look at some of the art that Tony Podesta had and some of the artists and some of the artists that he would frequently purchase art from, it's fucking weird. There's kids in cages. They're doing sacrifices. It's very odd. I don't know, man. I've never seen, and I've been to some wealthy people's homes, I've really never seen art like that.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people like Wexner and like Epstein, before this started to come out, I mean, their public persona, I mean, Bill Clinton in the like call in the early 2000s called Epstein a philanthropist. Right. I mean, they had like these rosy reputations, like, look at how much Wexner's given to Ohio State University and the medical school is named after him. And, oh, he gave all this money to a hospital. Look at him giving all his money away. And people say the same stuff about people like Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Bill Gates, after the Epstein arrest, kept hanging out with Epstein. He knew Epstein apparently in the 90s. They did business together. I don't know what that business was, but Gates flew on his plane like 3 times. He went to the island.
Now,
he did all this stuff. That's apparently fine. That's apparently fine.
Epstein had all these different scientists around him. He said his interest was eugenics. What, I mean, what, in what form, what are they trying to do? If you had to wrap your head around why he's having these salons with all these scientists and he's having these, you know, meetings with all these important people in the field of science. What is the goal? What do you think the end goal? If you had to speculate, and I know you don't love doing that because you're a great reporter, but if you had to speculate, what do you think he wants? Does he want to influence health policy so that it kind of promotes some of these more nefarious ideas that he has? And does he want to wrap eugenics up in like a nice bow and say, here, it's not eugenics, it's whatever, you know, whatever you would call it. It's better life. We call it better life, you know?
Right. Less so life. I don't know exactly what Bill Gates wants, but I do know what Jeffrey Epstein was interested in terms of his eugenics interest. And this has been reported in mainstream media, but if that's the case with like what they did to Maria Farmer and they only reported 5%, I mean, honestly, who knows? But what they did say is that he was basically interested in essentially making like a master race and that they were looking for girls that were intelligent and these they were asking about grades. You know, they only wanted smart kids, creative kids, talented kids. And actually, Maria Farmer's younger sister was one of these girls that was going to be that was being groomed to have Epstein's children. And Ghislaine, and then after the assault, you know, she got. You know, Ghislaine called her and said, you ruined everything. Like she was going to have, your sister was going to have Epstein's baby. She was so lucky and all this stuff. Like they really think their genetics are superior. As far as what Bill Gates might be up to, I would, you know, I don't want to speculate because I don't know what he says in private, so I can't assume, but I would really urge people to look at the history of eugenics in the United States because in the 1920s, the eugenics movement was so powerful that the Supreme Court ruled that a mother and her young daughter had to be sterilized because they were too stupid.
Really?
And they were from like a poor, yeah, oh yeah. And this is not isolated. There were states that had passed eugenic laws before this. I mean, they're the billionaires of the Gilded Age were really into this. And they were like, and the lady that they said to sterilize in that Supreme Court ruling was a poor white person. You know, right. They were just like, oh, you're too stupid because you're from, you know, the Appalachian Mountains, you know.
Right.
But they, you know, they've been like that with other, you know, it's not just white people, you know.
Of course. No, of course not.
Obviously.
Of course not. Yeah.
But that type of mentality actually ended up inspiring Hitler. But obviously, with World War II, that type of mentality went out of style. And there's a lot of people who make the convincing argument that those people that were eugenicists in the United States during that period of time maintained their views, but found a way to sort of let it slide under the public. Right.
Right. Right.
And
what about a lot of people?
I don't want to get too controversial, but
get
Margaret
there.
Sanger.
Go there.
Okay. Well, Margaret Sanger, who was the founder of like Planned Parenthood.
Right.
A long time ago. She wrote very disturbing things about African-Americans.
Right.
And intentionally wanted to put Planned Parenthood centers there where there was the highest concentration of African Americans.
Yeah, okay? I mean, it's a bit.
And that's
it's
not a conspiracy.
Yeah.
You can read her letters.
No,
it's odd. You know, I don't want to get into the whole like issue because it's like such a left and right divide, and I really try and do everything I can to like transcend the left right divide because there's so much more important stuff.
And
to
you mean the issue
like,
meaning abortion?
Bickering. Right. But right. I mean, if this lady was saying this stuff and saying, I want to put the center here because I don't want this particular race to like, I don't want their, you know, I don't want them to have a lot of kids.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
That's messed up. And Bill Gates' father was associated with that organization. Apparently he had ties to the Rockefellers, and the Rockefeller family were from the time of the first billionaire, J.D. Rockefeller, in the Gilded Age, where they were passing all these laws. He was into that stuff, and his sons were into that stuff.
Right.
Right. So I would say to people that want to sort of look at this, look at the history, because we know what those people were saying and what they were doing, because they were open about it then.
Right.
Right.
And now they've
and ask yourself, did this continue? They were never held accountable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very possible. And if you look at stuff Bill Gates has said, like, you know, a couple of years ago, too many Africans.
Right. So now those views have maybe gone underground, but they're still very much, you know, held by people. And what do you think it is? You know, you study these people, you've written about them. Is it power? Is it control? Do they want to just control the entire world? What's the goal here? What's the end game? Is to just have a slave race of people that will do the jobs, and then have this, you know, kind of perfected race of people that gets to enjoy the benefits of, I mean, what do you think the picture looks like?
Well, really quick, I want to go back to my last point really quick, because, you know, like you saying this had gone like underground. I really believe that, because something that Maria told me is that she heard Ghislaine and all of these people she was around say the most racist things. And I mentioned earlier that they were very supremacist, but they would not go to cities where they thought there were too many African Americans. They said the most racist things about these people.
Yeah, I want my human traffickers to be woke and politically correct. I do. I don't sleep at night if my human traffickers are not for diversity and inclusion. But so Ghislaine Maxwell, I mean, it's just fascinating to me, man, when you look at all this stuff, how evil these people are, how powerful they are, how big the system is, how utterly impossible it seems to get any justice. Nobody seems to be able to, even when it looks like. Now, who whacked Epstein in your estimation? Mossad hit? What is it?
You know, I honestly don't know, because, you know, a lot of people spend a lot of time talking about his death and like what happened to him. I think that attention is better spent asking how the heck are we going to get Ghislaine Maxwell in prison, and how are we going to get Leslie Wexner in prison?
Well, we're probably not. I mean, yeah, I wish we would.
I don't really know who killed Epstein. There's no camera footage. So honestly, anything could have happened.
Right.
Honestly. I mean, who really knows? I mean, the prison guards won't talk. They're being charged. I mean, they won't say anything, right? They were apparently like asleep or whatever,
right?
You know, and the camera footage was there, and then it disappeared, and who knows? So, you know, I don't really know what happened, honestly. But there's a lot of people that definitely wanted him dead. I think that's pretty clear. And he was middle management. He probably wasn't worth saving. If they killed Robert Maxwell,
They're going to kill Jeffrey.
They'd probably kill him too. He outlived his usefulness. You know what I mean?
Coronavirus, man-made, natural. What do you think?
Well, I have no idea what it is. And I think everyone that's saying they know what it is, I don't think they're telling the truth, because it's really hard to know. There's so much information out there.
Yeah.
It's hard. But what I do think is inaccurate, and we're seeing this huge, very similar to the weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, let's go to war with China tomorrow. Yeah, let's go to war with China tomorrow. Yeah.
But what's disturbing is that a lot of the evidence these people are citing, saying it's a Chinese bioweapon, for example, they cite studies. And if you actually look at those studies and you look at the funding, it was funded by not just the Chinese government, but a lot of U.S. government organizations. And that lab in Wuhan had direct ties to Fort Detrick.
Right. In
you
Maryland.
Know, and these other, you know, U.S. research organizations, even these people that are claiming that it's an exclusive Chinese bioweapon. They shared all these articles today saying Facebook's fact check. Worked at the Wuhan lab. It's an American.
Right.
And they're acting like people aren't going to get it. You know, I mean, so obviously there's like, why would they leave that out? You know,
what do you think?
There's
you think these shutdowns, continue? Do you think we ever get our rights back? Do you think that they're going to keep finding ways to take more and more rights under the guise of, now public health?
They will be.
It was terrorism and for many years. Now it'll be public health.
Yeah. Well, it's another invisible enemy, isn't it? I mean, you know, there were the terrorists after 9/11, and now, you know, we're allied. The U.S. government is like allied with Al-Qaeda in Syria and Yemen, basically, like fighting on their behalf.
That's amazing.
And we gave up all these rights for that. And now we're openly supporting them. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
But in terms of coronavirus, some of the reporting I've done in recent weeks has really shown that a lot of the solutions for coronavirus that we're being told we need to, you know, these systems, like these surveillance systems we have to implement, you know, these were planned out last year, months ago.
Yeah.
For example, this coronavirus surveillance system, they were promoting this under a different name called Safe Home under this agency they wanted to make called HARPA. It was Ivanka Trump promoting that. Now Jared Kushner is promoting this thing today in his like new task force or whatever. But last year they were saying it needed to be done to stop mass shootings.
And what
and
is
what
this?
They are doing is they are taking these solutions that they want to implement, and they're just tacking on whatever Americans are most afraid of.
What is this?
It was
surveillance?
Mass shootings.
Yeah.
Now it's coronavirus.
What is this surveillance system, though? What are they trying to do? What are they going to try to do?
Well, they're basically trying to get Americans' private medical records in a giant database mixed with everything that's on your consumer smartphone. And use it to make sure you're not social distancing and all this stuff. But it's definitely more than that, and I'll tell you why. Because last October, Bill Barr, the attorney general, created a pre-crime program that started this year. It's called DEEP, the Disruption and Early Engagement Program. He created that last year, saying that this was supposed to be to stop mass shootings. And it's pre-crime. Because the idea behind it is that you arrest someone who's mobilizing towards violence. And the way you do it is by looking at their health records and what they say on social media, and that you arrest them before they can strike. Right. That's pre-crime. And that is a slippery slope. And after coronavirus and all these lockdowns happens, Bill Barr's Department of Justice asked for the right to indefinitely detain Americans without trial. He hasn't gotten them yet, but he might. And
right.
to think that this whole surveillance dragnet, they're not going to be pushing through. It's crazy. I have another report coming out next week about this little known U.S. government body called the National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence. It's chaired by Eric Schmidt, formerly the head of, you know, Alphabet, Google's parent company, and is full of all these like CIA guys, Pentagon guys. And basically what they say in this document that just came out last year that no one's reporting on, which is insane, they basically say in order for the U.S. as a for national security purposes, we have to maintain a technological advantage over China and artificial intelligence. And the way to do that is to remake American society so that we adopt a Chinese style like surveillance state, but worse than what China has.
Wow.
That's basically what they say.
And where
is scandalous.
Where is this coming out of again?
I'll send it to you. It came out as a Freedom of Information Act request just like a couple days ago. No one's covered it. And it is just the most scandalous document.
And this
it's
is,
insane.
And they're saying,
and it totally is the opposite of the rhetoric we are hearing about, you know, all the social credit score and all China's abusing human rights. They are literally saying we have to do that here or we will not be able to set international norms and not be able to like control the market of the fourth industrial revolution that AI is going to create and all this stuff. And so, they're basically saying we have to eliminate individual car ownership. We have to eliminate cash and credit cards. You can't even see like they call all of these things legacy systems.
Wow.
You know, that's basically the American way of life. No more in-person shopping. You have to do it all online.
And this is so fucking nuts because this is
nuts.
What I was talking about. And these are people that are saying in order to be China, we have to become China.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. They're saying China is going to leapfrog us and go miles ahead in adoption of these technologies unless we do what they're doing and we do it faster. And we have to leapfrog them, basically.
And
they're basically using this pandemic to do that, to remake society. They're doing this controlled demolition of the economy, and they're not going to reopen it up until they remake everything, I think.
Wow.
Based on the stuff that they've been saying.
This is very disturbing. So they want to get rid of a lot of these legacy systems.
That's what they call it.
Yeah.
Like going to a store in person and buying stuff, legacy system.
Wow.
Yeah. Owning your own car, legacy system. Wow. Using cash or a credit card legacy system.
So now what are you going to use?
They want it to be all smartphone-based payments like they do in India now, because India, like a year or two ago, like eliminated almost all currency in circulation and no one there has credit cards. So they all had to adopt this like mobile wallet, like digital wallet, which is really similar to the stuff they put out in that coronavirus relief bill, the digital dollar and all this stuff that they were like sort of putting in there.
Yeah, What was in that bill? What are they doing? What are they building in there? What are they doing in that bill?
Well, I haven't read it all. It's apparently like several thousand pages. Yeah. But considering at the time they passed it, after the crisis was like, you know, exploding, they had that prepared well in advance.
Right.
Those kind of type of bills, just like the Patriot Act, they don't write them like in a couple days and say, here, sign. I mean, right on 9/11, the Patriot Act was ready to go. And right. I think this bill is the same. And like I said, all these people last year were like making these plans and they were simulating pandemics too. Crimson Contagion, that was a 19 federal agency, 12 states, a bunch of private companies gaming out a pandemic in the U.S. four times last year from January to August. And they had one day on the last exercise or the last simulation, which was like lasted 4 days. The entire third day was the Secretary of the Treasury and Finance. And I think that's where that bill came from.
So they want everything like China on your smartphone. They want everything, you know, they want everything basically.
Yeah. They don't even want people to have laptops. They want it all on the phone.
Why?
Everything on the phone.
Why not laptops? Are they harder to trace or? Yeah, nobody knows.
I guess they just want everyone's life on the phone. That's pretty much where it's going. They're like phase all this stuff out and make it all the phone.
All the phones.
It's crazy. I will send you this. So you send see, me I'm it. Not making this
I
up.
I don't believe you're
and
making it
saying
up.
All the stuff like mass surveillance is awesome. It's a killer way to train artificial intelligence. They say it's awesome that in China, people are using the police use voice recognition technology to arrest people before they commit crimes.
Yeah. Oh boy. Before they commit crimes.
And this commission is supposed to give the recommendations to the government about how, from this national security point of view, how to maintain an advantage over China. And this is what they're saying. And someone had to do this Freedom of Information Act request to get it. And this is like the only document produced by that body they got. And like I said, this is headed by the ex-Google guy, Eric Schmidt. But it has like two different, like the first CEO of InQtel, the CIA's venture capital arm, right?
Yeah.
It has the current CEO of InQtel. It has the former deputy director of national intelligence. I mean, it is just, it's spooks and it's Amazon. It's Microsoft, Google, it's Oracle. Oracle, by the way, is involved in the coronavirus response right now and like reopening the economy with Trump. I mean, all of these same players that are on this commission are also involved in this reopening the economy business. And what do you think they're going to do? Probably what they were saying in private last year. You know what I mean?
So this is really terrifying. This is like ending freedom, whatever, what little freedoms we have left, getting rid of them. Now, why no private ownership of vehicles? What is behind that? Is that the climate related? They just don't
No. They want autonomous self-driving fleets of like ride-sharing cars. They say that like things like Uber and all this stuff, that's where this has to go. That individual car ownership is like dangerous and that it needs to be fleet ownership. It's more efficient. And all this stuff. I mean, that's basically what
about
they lay
owning
out.
A prop-
and they say, if we don't do it, then China will be better at it than us.
What?
And then they'll export it to other countries and our giant Silicon Valley tech companies will lose money and all this stuff. I mean, that's how they're thinking.
If we don't put a chip in your arm, China's going to put chips in everybody's arm and they're going to make the money.
Exactly the mentality.
Fuck.
And it's.
What about home ownership? Is there anything in the document about that?
They didn't talk about home ownership, okay. No, not specifically. It's redacted. They didn't include all the slides.
Oh, so there's a lot in that. There's a lot in that document that they left out.
Oh, I'm sure.
They redacted.
And there's obviously more documents. They've had tons of meetings and briefings and all this stuff, and this is the only thing they've put out.
Yeah, one little document trickled out. And these are all the guy from Google. So these are, and this is what I was talking to Joe about. And this is what I was saying. A lot of these people have pretty fucking scary ideas that are hidden from public view. And by the time you know what they are, they've already been foisted on you and you can't get away from them. Wow.
Well, that's why it's important to like bring this out. I will send this over. I mean, like, well, hopefully you won't share it before my report's up. So
No. We'll wait. You do your thing. People, this will come out Sunday in 2 days, and then people will listen to us talk about it. Everybody will read your article. I mean, all of this is mind-blowing. All of it is crazy.
I really feel like they're using the lockdown to do a bunch of stuff they normally couldn't get away with. And I think that's why this ruling about Epstein and the sweetheart deal happened now too.
Right.
Right. Ghislaine Maxwell, Wexneroff, what are people going to do? And then the corporate relief, the relief bill or whatever was a 4 times bigger bailout for Wall Street than 2008. And after the 2008 bailouts, there was Occupy Wall Street. There were protests, but everyone's on lockdown. What are they going to do?
Right. The yellow vest protest in France.
$1,200 check.
The yellow vest in France are done.
Off of for 10 weeks.
Yeah.
That happened in France. Yeah.
Yeah, that's done.
All done.
The Hong Kong protests are done. Right.
It happened in a lot of, actually, a lot of the first countries to do lockdowns actually all had protest movements going on. It's like, so France had the yellow vest. Spain had the separatists in Catalonia. Chile, where I live, had a lot of protests that began last October that were trying to get the current president of Chile to resign. Those went away. And the president of Chile, Sebastián Piñera, he declared a constitution, like suspended the constitution for 90 days and declared a lockdown before there was a single death in Chile. He was like, bam, let's go. Mm-hmm.
Did they give a time frame with any of these things that they want to do in that document that trickled out, or we don't know?
It doesn't give a time frame, but considering that, you know, they're like, we got to act now or China will, you know, take it over. It just really shows that all this rhetoric about like China bad, America good, that's not what they really think. What they really think is like, we like the Chinese model, but it needs to be us doing it. And we need to be the people exporting it. And then we'll be the global hegemony forever.
Yeah.
But if we don't do it, then it'll be China.
And people are going to be led into the slaughterhouse because we've created this fake us versus China. And we're going to become China, supposedly in order to beat China. Great.
Yeah.
Well, not great, but you know what it is.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's just the most illogical thing ever. And that's why I think it's so important, because then people will see like the lie and the rhetoric, you know, people saying, oh, China is a huge threat to human rights and they're hostile and they're going to expand. Well,
which I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're not doing anything great over in China in terms of human rights.
Oh, no.
But
I'm not rooting for them. I'm just saying like the U.S. is being super hypocritical publicly.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing like what Clinton said. I have a public and a private position. I mean, all of these people.
It's very true. Very disturbing stuff, Whitney Webb. As always, we're up at night now. We were up before, but now we're up more. Tell people where they can support you financially. Any which way, you are so essential. You're the only person really doing this kind of work. Where can people read your stuff? Where can they find you? How can they give you money?
I set up a Patreon in January to help finance my Epstein book, because it's a small publisher that was really gracious. It was, they also published the book on the Franklin scandal by Nick Bryant. So it's a good fit, but unfortunately, because they're small, they really couldn't get me much in terms of an advance. So a lot of stuff like research help and things like that, or access to some, you know, online sources and databases and stuff, I have to pay all of that out of pocket. So if you'd like to support that, you can support me on Patreon. I also have some exclusive
podcasts. So tell them what your
Patreon exclusive.
Yeah, tell them what your Patreon is. Where can they go?
You just have to search for Whitney Webb, but I think it's Whitney Webb MPN for when I used to work at Mint Press News.
We'll put it in the description of the YouTube and on the podcast. Yeah. We'll get them there. Yeah.
And you can follow me on Twitter, _ Whitney Webb. I'm also on Mastodon and Gab as well, which, because I'm probably gonna get kicked off of Twitter at some point.
Do you think so?
I think the deplatforming is coming. Yeah. Actually last, I think it was October, September, all these social media companies met with, intelligence in the US, and they were like, you guys have to protect public discourse ahead of the 2020 election. And they were like, yeah, we'll basically like deplatform you before next November. So I think it's probably coming. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, That'll be the least of our problems if even half of what we've just heard comes to fruition, you know?
You know? Oh, and one more thing I forgot. Sorry. All my written work you can read at thelastamericanvagabond.com. That's also a YouTube channel, The Last American Vagabond. And I go on there sometimes, talk about my work, and it gets showcased there as well.
Well, Whitney Webb, you are really, really important. You are what I would call an essential worker. So
thanks.
I hope everybody goes and supports you, reads your stuff. I mean, and we'll always have you on. You're phenomenal. Thank you very much for spending time with us, and good luck and be safe out there.
Yeah, thanks. Likewise. Right. I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.